Alrighty. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night, wherever you are in the world. My name is Jordana. I am a grateful, recovering child of God and a compulsive eater, a food addict, a volume addict specifically, binger, restrictor at times, exercise bulimic, and 100 pounder. If you would please allow me a moment just to say the set aside prayer. God, help me set aside everything I think I know about you. Everything I think I know about myself, everything I think I know about others, and everything I think I know about my own recovery, so that I may have an open mind and a new experience with these things. Please help me see the truth. Amen. So I definitely qualify to be here. Thank you for the invitation and the opportunity to do service. I do have some notes that I follow. The ADD in me, bless my heart, sometimes gets me a little squirrely, so it keeps me on track. But as I was reflecting just yesterday, there are a couple things that I kind of want to hone in on. So I'm going to really watch my time because I don't want to spend too much time on what it was like. But I think it's important to do that because when I was a newcomer and listening to shares and speakers, sometimes they would gloss over that, and it left me with feeling like, I don't know, you didn't really have it that bad. Was it really that bad for you? Because it just seemed a little too magical. And I'm cynical. Jordana wakes up with me sometimes too, and that's okay. That's a part of my personality, so I can honor that in myself and others. Anyway, as a child, very early in my life, actually, the very first memory I have, cognitive memory I have, is of a childhood trauma that occurred at ages 4 and 5. And the very next memory I have is of eating compulsively. I had to have been between maybe first and second grade, and I'm like making a food in my kitchen, and I can hear a car drive up in the driveway, and I hear the door close or whatever, and I instinctively like just put it all, or I think I put the bowl like under my bed in the moment and finished it later or did whatever. But I knew the important part about that point is that I already knew from a very early age, not necessarily how to hide food or whatever. I think we learn hiding very early in childhood, but I knew or felt in myself that I was wrong. I felt that shame. I felt the heaviness that my drug of choice, my comfort, was odd, was weird. I wasn't like other people. And that is the theme through my life. As I grew up, my family was religious, and those were mostly positive experiences, but I would see other people living what seemed to be free kind of lives and joyful experiences and existences, and I didn't think it was possible for me. It was my parents who passed a lot of the food behaviors down. I remember seeing fast food wrappers in the floor of my dad's truck, and my mother always had some sort of food, usually sweet something, in her nightstand and in her purse, and there was always some stash that nobody knew about, and everybody had their special thing that was hidden in this cupboard, and you didn't touch it, and it would get really rowdy if people found out that you ate their thing. And so food was more than just an enjoyment. It was a focus in an unhealthy way. Even when people were around, I would feel isolated. I was very angry because that trauma from age 4 and 5, my brain actually suppressed. So moving through my actual childhood up until age 21, I did not have memory of that. And it was at age 21 when it came back to me, and it made a little more sense as to why I was so angry as a child. But it still didn't change the fact that it had happened and that I had made decisions as a result. And that was when I was 21. It was still another 15 years or so before I started my recovery. So even though I knew about the trauma, and even though I knew about why I had started eating compulsively and some of the factors in it, I still didn't think there was a solution. In fact, finding that out was almost like a nail in a coffin, so to speak, because I thought, well, I'm just this broken person. I'm uniquely lost and confused. And because of that, I kind of threw up my hands like, well, I guess I'm just a victim, an innocent bystander in my own life. And this is just my lot. I never imagined living past 40. I never even contemplated like having children, having grandchildren, retirement, like not even really getting married. Because, and now I see it, I didn't want to pass the same thing down to any children I might have. And that overriding sense of like, well, I'm already defeated. I might as well, if you can't beat them, join them kind of thing. Like really just, this is who I am. And I took on being morbidly obese and living that way as part of my identity. And so I started my recovery in 2020. I had been going to a counselor for a few years because everybody else had so many problems. I thought, you know, going to counseling was going to help me fix the people around me who were making my life so hard. Little did I know that I can't control any of those things. And actually, it was 3 years into that, I finally hit my own personal rock bottom. I like I said, I didn't ever fit in physically. But at that point, I was in the largest size I could find. At 420 pounds, every moment of my life was painful, in more ways than physical. But that was huge. I wanted to be dead. Honestly, when I would open my eyes in the morning, I thought, why am I still alive? I wasn't exactly suicidal, but the ideations were real. And very often had to sleep with a special pillow because of reflux and breathing issues. You know, when my feet would hit the floor in the morning, they were already sore. I'm in a profession where I stand for a good amount of the day. And so that was excruciating every day. My skin was in terrible condition, acne, scarring, darkening of the skin around certain areas. Like I said, my clothes were all way too tight, but that was all I knew. My hair was getting thinner. My cycle only came every 4 to 6 months. And that was actually since like age 13. And I didn't know it, but I had a pretty severe thyroid autoimmune disease that hadn't been diagnosed yet. My depression was getting worse. I was on prescription drugs more than ever for a couple of different things and type 2 diabetes. And that's the short list. There are still more. Like I said, I don't want to spend too much time on that, but I think it's important to know. I know the pain of compulsive eating. And then, like I said, that's the short list. The even longer list is the people I hurt along the way. And I was in so much denial that I thought that my disease and my drug of choice of food didn't hurt anybody else. I knew I was hurting myself, and I was okay with that, I suppose. But it wasn't until I was actually in the first time through the steps and I did an amends to my sister, actually my older sister, and God had really put on my heart to apologize, but there wasn't a specific action per se. We had a strained relationship, but I felt it necessary to sit down with her. And that was a really powerful experience because I humbled myself enough to just say, I'm sorry, because I know, and I do know what it's like to love someone who's in addiction. And it must have been so hard, especially as my older sister, to see me eating myself to death one bite at a time and just the pain of that. And I said it, but I didn't actually know. She had never expressed this to me. And that moment was so transforming for me because she said, you were never really there. You were never really present. In events, family gatherings, et cetera, even in one-on-one conversations, I really never felt like I could get that close to you and like we had a relationship. And that was so eye-opening to me. And that's when that was actually the moment when I realized, wow, I had been a maid of honor. I honestly lost track of how many, I think it was like 12 or 13 times, not just a bridesmaid, a maid of honor. And I was really skilled at making it seem like I was close to people, but not really letting them in. Not a single one of those people knew about my addiction. And there were more too than just food. There were other things that I was letting control my life. So when I hit my rock bottom at 2020, began the steps, the first few things I set aside were food behaviors. At that time, my food plan was pretty basic as far as not binging, eating at night, specifically after everyone's asleep. I would either stay up late or get back up and eat it like at night, usually in front of the TV. I think the biggest issue with that is that it was ingrained in it. In fact, to this day, it's very rare that I can sit down. It's been almost 6 years, and watch more than about 20 or 30 minutes of TV. It's just, and maybe it's because it's not as enjoyable as I thought it was. I only enjoyed it before because it was coupled with the food. I don't know. Like I said earlier, maybe it's the ADD. After 20 minutes, my brain's like, okay, what's next? The other behavior is eating in the car, especially alone. It was a really normal occurrence for me to go through the drive-through on the way home, headed home for dinner and have a whole meal from that drive-through experience and then get home and have dinner with the family. So moving forward, as I began to work the steps, like I said, I grew up in a home that had a form of a higher power, but didn't really see it as a relationship, as some force outside of me that could help me. It was an obligation. It was an obligation. And so coming into 12-step and learning about a higher power who not only can help me, but wants to, was the big shift. And I remember, I want to say maybe I had been in recovery like 3 months. I'd been going to meetings, but I don't think I had actually started my steps yet. And I was laying on the floor. I was like in excruciating back pain. I also had two bulging discs in my lower back, and I was had started to love myself enough to go to therapy for that physical therapy. And I was laying on the floor, and like just totally laid out, and trying to stretch and do the thing. And I remember this moment in my mind where I finally let go of control. I let go of the outcome. I let go of what I thought God was gonna sound like, look like, feel like. And this supernatural experience, basically like a radiating light, just overwhelmed me, overcame me. In that moment, a lot of the actual physical pain was relieved. And I realized how much my body had been just trying to survive. And that also began the process of making amends to my body, my physical body. And to this day, I try to include in my gratitudes every day one, at least one gratitude toward my body, about my body. And I usually pick the thing that's annoying me the most. I have, if I have the thought in my mind when I look in the mirror, oh, I don't like this part, I don't like this part, whatever, I try to be certain to include that in what I'm grateful for. If it's a certain texture of skin or discoloration or whatever. Then the next day when I write my gratitudes and I send it off to my gratitude buddy, to be grateful and turn it into an ingratitude list, which is something I learned in a meeting somebody shared one time, that when I can't think of something I'm grateful for, to start writing down what I think is so terrible and then kind of push myself to say thank you for the struggle. Thank you for this. And to flip it on its head. The other thing I want to focus on is step 11. Like I said, I thought I knew what a higher power was about. I thought I knew what God looked like, sounded like, etc. And I had really put God in a hole, in a box, and had handcuffed a higher power, and limited what that looked like. And just recently, I'd say in the last 6 months, started kind of digging into and exploring other forms of meditation, other forms of prayer, specifically listening. So I've been going to some 11-step meetings where we do two-way prayer and then three-way prayer where you share it with others and are open to reflections in OA meetings. And then also recently did like a part of a two-way prayer train where you're like coupled with someone and you share that. And that has been such a beautiful experience. It's also teaching me a lot about listening to others because they can share what they're hearing from their higher power. And I don't have to evaluate it or critique it or judge it or interpret anything or be anything for them. I can just hear what my higher power is saying to me through them. And that has been so powerful.
Gentle reminder.
Thank you so much. I think practicing these principles in all our affairs looks like when I am showing up in those meetings or even in the workplace with friends, with family who aren't in program, others, other relationships, it looks like that same listening. And the listening that I'm learning to do in meetings, when I listen to someone share and catch myself judging them, critiquing them, first of all, 9 times out of 10, whatever character defect that they are currently exhibiting that I think is so annoying is usually one that I can't stand in my own self. So it's like looking in a mirror, and that's what's hard about it. The other thing is that when I learn to listen in that way, without the judgment, without the cynical Jordana, as I called her earlier, bless her heart, without that part, I can hear from God. And I remove that judgmental, critical thing. But there's also balance. I also don't have to do my 11-step like other people do their 11-step. It doesn't have to be that rigid. So getting away from rules, but still having like this really loving boundary, I think is huge. The other thing I wanted to touch on this morning, as I was reflecting about this group, because I have shared it before, I think it was like Thanksgiving Day. I remember really well because I was on break and my husband thought I was psycho for getting up. I'm in Texas, so it's a little early here, but it's good. It's service. I heard in the announcements, you know, there's always a need. I used to think, oh, you know, this meeting is so well run, you know, whatever meeting I was sitting in. And it wasn't until I started to do more active service in the meetings that I regularly attend that I realized how much work it really takes. I was, you know, when you speak in this meeting, you fill out like a Google form to get released to be recorded and like that. And as, and I deal with Google and Google Workplace and stuff like that in my job. And as I'm going through this form, I'm like, I was filled with gratitude as I was filling out a Google form. Like what? Because I realized how much work that is. A lot of work. It is a lot of, and here's what it is. It's love. It's the love of my higher power flowing through me, seeing a need and stepping up. And this is the point I want to drive home. It has nothing to do with my ability. Like there are some skills, some talents I naturally possess and whatever that I can use in service, but the service positions where I feel the most joy and get the most back from are ones that I don't know what I'm doing. I have no idea what I'm doing. And I'm like, okay. Like there's a regular meeting I go to and I'm the chair for the group conscious meeting. And I know nothing about Robert's rules. I have no idea what I'm doing, but that's maybe what makes me qualify so well for that position, because I'm not going to be there trying to tell everybody what they should do. And I just wanted to really, it was really on my heart this morning to encourage, if you are in that spot where you're like, oh, I don't have anything to offer. I only have a month of abstinence, or maybe I only have 2 days of abstinence, whatever the case may be, you have something to offer. I have something to offer, and it has nothing to do with my ability, you know, going to being right size. It has everything to do with, I'm another human who is also found that I'm broken, but there is a solution. There's a problem, but I know what the solution is. And just that fact alone means that I can do service. The ability to, the last thing I wanted to share, I see it's 1 minute left. The ability to start over anytime, I think, is the other thing I wanted to share this morning. I am so grateful that I had days where I did not stay on plan in the morning, or maybe it was like 2 p.m. and I made a choice that I knew God didn't sign off on. I can at 2:01 start a new day. And this global community is one of the things that helped me. I remember one time I was in a meeting and it was like 6 a.m. here and like 10 p.m. or something in Australia, and just thinking, okay, let me just fast forward. Let's just say I'm in Australia. It's 10 p.m. I could start, you know, or vice versa. It's 10 p.m. here. It's 6 a.m. there. I can start a new day right here. So instead of it's 5 o'clock somewhere, it's 5 a.m. somewhere and someone's waking up and starting their new day, I can start a new day today too in this moment. 5:26 p.m. or, you know, whatever the time may be. So thank you so much for letting me share. Thank you so much for inviting me. And I'm so grateful. And I welcome Outreach. My number's in my name right there.